So, if you have questions for the Robert Dean, he's our guest tonight, and I'm going to be very interested, actually, in what you're asked. Just one more from me, Robert, which encompasses a couple of points here. One is, you believe we're facing the loss of the U.S. Constitution, and you think this comes through some sort of national security state that... What is now in existence, growing, and will eventually simply erode all of our rights in the war on?
Art, I'll be blunt with you. I think we've lost most of our Constitution already. I think we began losing it probably in 1947 when we passed the National Security Act. And that was the beginning, I think. And it's been kind of whittled down and diced up and nibbled here and nibbled there,
yes,
over the years, until the Constitution is really in tatters. Look, for example, Art, if I may use just simply one example, look at the monetary problem. Look at the national debt. Congress is supposed to keep its eye on and maintain control over expenditures of funds. They're supposed to not allow us to get into such a deficit. But look what happened here. Just about a year ago, actually it was less than a year, the General Accounting Office came out with a fact that the Department of Defense had misplaced, they don't know where it went, $3.5 trillion. Now this was not spent, this was simply misplaced. They don't know where the money went. Now if Congress was conducting a proper oversight, which they are required to do by the Constitution, that kind of thing could never have happened.
$3.5 trillion.
$3.5 trillion, and it made the newspapers one day, and then it just died. You know, I thought to myself, name of God, why aren't the congressmen standing up? Why aren't the guys in the Senate standing up, screaming bloody murder, demanding to know where that money went?
I must admit, I didn't hear that myself. $3.5 trillion.
It was over a course of about 2 years. They couldn't account for it. They don't know where it went.
That's a lot of money to lose.
Oh my God! Well, that's only one example. You know, the Constitution literally is in tatters. The other issue right now that I'm angry as hell about: my son is a career naval officer. He's not in harm's way at the moment. He's in London.
Yes.
But look, Art, we are in the middle of a war, and Congress did not declare war.
Well, we haven't done that in quite a while.
Well, yeah, I was in Korea, for God's sake,
uh-huh,
and that was undeclared.
That's right. That's what I'm pointing at.
And we're supposed to keep our hands on that kind of thing.
Yes. There was just the most recent Supreme Court thing on eminent domain. I mean, everybody's hot about that.
Yeah, look at that.
I know. Look at
that
is right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Dean. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, this is Kyle in Washington State.
Yes, Kyle.
Mr. Dean, I have a couple of questions, and please don't think I'm arguing any of the facts that you brought up. First, it's hard to see a logical reason why the government would keep a lot of secret terms as far as, you know, alien civilizations and whatnot, unless it was, you know, for a whole keeping us from the bad news. I mean, if they already have control and the power and technology, what does it benefit to keep us in the dark at this point?
Well, you have a good question, Kyle. All I can do is point to the old Brookings report, which was finalized and given to Congress in 1961. They concluded, I think Margaret Mead was a contributor to that, that any society that is confronted with an incredibly advanced other society, which are so far beyond them, that shock alone could lead to the destruction of the more primitive society. And I think that's become national policy ever since 1961.
Well, now, from 1961 until now, we've had tons and tons of Hollywood movies and television shows, and everything has been so sensationalized as far as you know, aliens and spacecraft and space travel.
Yes.
I mean, it just seems that maybe, I don't know, it just seems that maybe we wouldn't, it wouldn't be such a big shock to everybody.
Caller, why do you think we had such a blast of exposure to all things alien in our media?
Oh, I totally believe that that has to do with maybe a long, drawn-out desensitization process. You know, I mean, why else would we have the whole idea of, I mean, ideas and fantasy come from something, and it has to be, you know, I mean, somebody had to have seen something at some point to start the whole role.
Kyle, a number of years ago, I told Art himself that I believed that he was part of a long-term disclosure project himself, even without knowing it.
Yeah, I know. It's occurred to me, Robert. It's absolutely occurred to me. Not that they had anything to do with the formation of this format or what we do here or any of the rest of that, because it just ain't so. However, perhaps what I started doing was convenient for someone.
Exactly. You started people thinking, Art, and I think the government, or at least the guys that are making the policy, think that that's probably a good beginning.
And it is as much a reason why I exist now as any. On the international line, you're on the air with Robert Dean. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I was wondering if Mr. Dean had ever heard of a gentleman by the name, actually, I think he was on Coast to Coast before, by the name of Prophet Yahweh.
Yes. Yes. Yahweh. I've been getting communications from Yahweh recently, by the way.
And I remember seeing a news report where an actually reporter took him to a park, and he actually summoned one on the news.
Absolutely correct, Channel 13.
Yeah.
And get this, caller. I'm going to let you in on a little secret.
Okay.
This Yahweh fellow
now
is writing me emails saying the reason he's been in a dry spell, not been able to call up any lately, is because they, in quotes, want me, Art Bell, there with Yahweh to confirm this, and they're angry that I'm not there, and so they're not showing up when he calls them.
Okay.
I'm not kidding you.
I was thinking perhaps Washington, D.C. might be a better locale, but...
That's it. Let's ask Robert. Robert, there is this fellow, this man, calls himself the Prophet Yahweh, out here in the desert, from Las Vegas, you know, around the southern Nevada area. He's been saying he can call in spacecraft, and I must say, he took a reporter from Channel 13, ABC, in Las Vegas out, and damn well called one in. And they caught it on camera, and they ran the story. Now, that's pretty weird, but true.
Well, Art, I'll tell you, honestly, if he gets a hold of George Knapp, and you know George.
I know George, yes.
And if he can get George to go out with him in the desert, and George can be go with him and film it, then I'll start to believe it.
Then you'll start to believe it.
You then mean I might
that,
even
that
join,
he could call them.
I'll join you and George Knapp, and we'll all go out to the desert and say hello.
As a remote viewer, Robert, has it occurred to you to attempt it yourself?
I have, Art.
Excuse me?
I have.
And?
Well, I've gotten some results, but you know, it's not what you'd call a big ship hovering over my house.
Try me.
I've had a few visitors here at the house.
Visitors?
Yeah.
What kind of visitors?
Well, guys from somewhere else.
And you believe this as a result of your remote viewing?
I think so. I think what I did is I stuck my nose into some of their affairs, particularly in the facility up in Alaska. That was one that particularly interested me because Ingo Swann had told me that he was actually physically taken there one time.
You're not referring to HAARP, are you?
No.
Some other facility in Alaska.
No, listen, I know you know Ingo, and I know you respect him.
Yes.
He's got a book called Penetration. And in that book, he tells about being physically taken up to Alaska by somebody from the Department of Defense, one of the intelligence groups, who took him up there one night near that facility under that mountain. So I began to stick my nose into that, and I had people, or I had intelligences, I had a consciousness show up in my house. And I haven't shared this with hardly anybody.
And that's a wow, definitely.
Yeah, well, when you start getting intelligences and presences show up in your living room, you talk about a wow.
Yes, it's a wow. Did you get communication?
Yeah, sort of a curiosity, what the hell are you doing? And I tried to explain what I was doing, and then they left. So I haven't actually tried to call any of them up in the sky. I may try that sometime, but...
Well, if you're able to do what you just said, then doesn't it make it at least partly possible that this Yahweh character can do what he says?
Well, listen, Art, I've seen so damn much of in my life that I would never say Yahweh is a nutcase. No. He may be doing exactly what he says he's doing. But
well,
as I said, I'd love to see George out there, you and he and George some night. And if you guys can call one in, then I'll come up and shake Yahweh's hand.
You got it. All right, Robert. First time caller line, you're on the air with Robert Dean. Good morning.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Quite well.
Okay, George, let me tell you, first of all, I'm scared. George has what?
George isn't here.
Yeah, but he has three guest hosts coming in next week, so that does not mean you are relinquishing the weekends. Is that correct?
George is on vacation, sir.
Okay, so the guest hosts are...
He's on vacation all next week.
Well, let me give you a 15-second brief history. I was born Roman Catholic, Polish Roman Catholic, in, 1970 in Toledo, Ohio, which means it's pretty substantial. From there, we went to Wapakoneta, Ohio. And by the way, that lends credence to the fact that Neil Armstrong came from Wapakoneta, Ohio. And actually, from the age of 10 to 12, I delivered papers to his parents. Now, being a Roman Catholic, I was brought up in very specific ways. Yet, I would still just like to be considered, as far as names go, average caller. Because, Robert... How long is it going to take? Is it going to be the fact that Pepsi is going to introduce the first alien, or is it going to be, something
Pepsi?
That is...
Yeah, Pepsi?
Pepsi or Coke or Doritos or Frito-Lay or whoever introduces the first Vulcan, or the first alien or the first... Or is it going to be the fact that, they finally realize that even a person born Roman Catholic, being an altar boy for 8 years, even a person doing,
What about this person?
Everything about this person has been done right according to Roman Catholicism, who should not believe in aliens, yet still sees the logic in it.
All right, well, so there you have it. Somebody deeply involved in religion but able to handle this. Well, look, our audience is full of these people who, although they have one belief, swear up and down that all of this would be no problem for them. That they see these things, they deal with them, and their religion, their faith is not challenged in any way whatsoever. But, listen folks, you may need to hear the Lear test one more time. But if half of what John Lear said was true, you too would agree that no, this information could not be out. And Robert, I assume you're saying that at least half or more of what he said was correct.
Oh, more than what he said. He only touched the tip of the iceberg. To answer that young man who said he was brought up a Roman Catholic and he had no problem with this reality, have you heard of, you know who Monsignor Balducci is?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, well... Apparently, the Vatican has an entire subsection devoted to extraterrestrial communication. That there are Jesuits apparently at work over there and in other parts of the world where they have not only totally accepted the reality of the extraterrestrial presence, but the Vatican has got policy to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact,
the Vatican also has telescopes.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Really big telescopes.
They built one here in Arizona. They violated all kinds of laws and built one over there. Was it Mount Graham somewhere?
This is the truth. I don't know about violating laws. I know they went zipping right through what otherwise should have been an impossible pile of paperwork and authorizations to get this telescope where it is. I mean, they just, like a hot knife through butter.
The government decided that, you know, they were going to have that telescope up there, and the government made the way for them.
Robert, why do you think the Vatican applied that much pressure to get that telescope in that place? What is the Vatican looking for?
Now, at the end of the program, we've reached a point here where you've touched on really dynamite, and that's Nibiru, the 10th planet.
You think that's what they're looking
that's
for?
That's what the government, the Vatican, wants to be able to photograph and keep track of. Years ago, Art, Robert Harrington, who was the chief astronomer at the United States Naval Observatory, told Zechariah in an interview, he says, we've seen the 10th planet. We've discovered it. We know it's there. It's real. All we need to do is name it. And Zechariah said to him, he says, it's already been named. The Sumerians named it. The 10th planet is a reality, Art. And it's...
When the 10th planet passes near Earth again, do you know what is coming?
Well, I can pretty well put together, and I'm only an amateur here. All I know is what happened the last time it made a pass. It was 1600 B.C. The entire Minoan civilization came to an end. One of the largest volcanoes in the Mediterranean blew its top and literally obliterated the great Minoan civilization. Santorini, they call it, or Thera.
Well, I'm absolutely willing to believe
that 1600 BC.
That an object the size of this 10th planet passing close to Earth with the gravitational effects would cause cataclysmic end-of-life type events.
Art, it depends on whether it and we are on the same side of the sun when it makes its pass. The records are pretty clear that there have been cataclysmic disasters in the past. If it and we are on the same side of the sun when it makes its pass, we're in for a hell of a ride. We're going to have volcanoes and earthquakes and tidal waves that you wouldn't believe. And I believe that the government is aware of that. And I believe that the government is taking steps to try to, do a little planning.
And you think the Vatican's aware of it as well?
Oh, the Vatican is well aware, I'm sure of it.
If some event like this were on the way, you no doubt have the opinion we would not be told, correct?
Oh, no, you're not going to tell you, Art.
And what about the Vatican itself? If the Vatican were to learn that this event was on the immediate horizon, you believe they also would not say anything?
Well, I don't believe they'd make a worldwide announcement, no. I don't know what their emergency plans would be, Art.
Once again, here's Robert Dean. Robert, you're back on the air. Is there anything that we have not covered tonight that you particularly wanted to get on the air?
Well, Art, we were talking about what's happened to the Constitution and how we've allowed this country to turn into a national security state. And that bothers the hell out of me because in all the years I served in the military, I swore to defend with my life the Constitution. And I see that it's been cut and it torn apart in little bits and pieces over the years, and it really ticks me off a lot. Now, I don't know what to do about it except to try to get the American people to start waking up and paying attention. But their constitutional system of government, Art, is being taken from them a little bit at a time. It's like the frog in the hot water pot, you know, on the fire?
Yes.
Yeah, you put him in there and then you raise the heat slowly and he never knows until it's too late. I wanted to give you an example here.
I wonder where in this process, Robert, that it's too late.
Yeah, well, I keep hoping maybe it isn't. I know a maverick researcher, a guy, I got a warm spot in my heart for him, a guy I think you know by the name of Hoagland.
Yeah. You know what, before you dispense this, I want you to dispense, there are in this audience, as you well know, Robert, there's a lot of potential budding UFO researchers, people who have just begun to stumble into some of the evidence and the things that you have now been through all your life, Robert. What advice would you have for them? In view of what you believe now, what advice would you have for the young budding ufologist?
Well, Art, for those young budding people out there, and I know they're there, and I think they're the future of our country. I have a great love and respect for them. I would tell them to inform themselves and research and learn everything you can. Because as we said from the beginning of the program, this is the greatest story in human history. And it isn't about them, Art. It's not about the guys from out there.
So then you wouldn't discourage them?
No, I encourage them. As a matter of fact, on the website, my wife's website, which is beyondzebra.com, I've got a couple of recommended reading lists, which I've learned over the years and collected, and read and, you know, selected, and material that I would recommend for these young people to get a hold of some of this material and read, inform themselves, learn all they can, because this is the greatest story in human history, and they've got to learn about it. They can't just let the government con them and lead them down the primrose path. They've got to inform themselves, and research is the only answer.
That's interesting. It's diametrically very different than what John Lear said to my audience. And he basically said, look, these things are true. There's nothing you can do. Forget it. Just enjoy life, enjoy your family, and don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot you can do, Art. You can inform yourself. You can become knowledgeable. That knowledge takes away the fear.
And for Richard C.?
Oh, Dick has had such a problem with NASA. You know, look what they've tried to do with him on this Mars thing.
Yes.
What is it they say, NASA, never a straight answer?
I don't think they say that. Richard says that.
Well, there's a lot of truth there.
Yeah.
The Constitution is in tatters, but maybe it's not too late. NASA is sitting on top of some of the biggest stories in human history. Just to give you an example of this national security state, how bad it's become, did you know that they have photographed a boat on Mount Ararat and it's been classified top secret?
Well, I certainly have seen the photograph, Robert.
But you haven't seen the really good photograph.
You're probably right. Really good photograph?
They're classified, Art. They're classified top secret. I saw one little bit, a piece, that was classified that I was shown, and I couldn't walk away with it.
Well, isn't that interesting?
But it's a boat on Mount Ararat. Now, why in the hell would our government classify that top secret?
I'd have to give that some serious thought.
That gives you some example of the kind of thinking that's going on in government. For example, they've discovered a massive facility under the ice in Antarctica at Lake Vostok.
Boy,
apparently,
it's
an alien facility, and it's at one end of Lake Vostok.
I've heard it about it.
And NASA, what is it? The Jet Propulsion Laboratory was involved with it for one period of time because they were handling the satellites that were taking the deep satellite photographs under the ice. And then all of a sudden, it's taken away from JPL and turned over to NSA.
All right. Look, a lot of people want to talk to you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Dean. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi.
I'm a longtime listener. My name is Robert. I'm in New Mexico.
Yes, sir.
I'm a retired Border Patrol supervisor. And years ago, in 1964, I was stationed in Carlsbad. And my partner and I'd like Mr. Dean to hear this. My partner and I were heading north, and it was late, well, it was early in the morning, about 3 o'clock. And we turned off the highway out of Roswell heading for Portales. We were going to go up to pick up some aliens being held by the state police. About 3 or 4 miles out of Roswell, we got stopped by a roadblock. State police, air police, it was really wild.
Mm-hmm.
There were helicopters flying all over the place with searchlights. There were jeeps and everything combing there's a lot of sand dunes out there combing around. And we knew the two state police officers had walked back and told us, well, you're going to have to hold you guys up for a while. We said, what's going on? They said, you won't believe this. We're not supposed to talk about it, but you guys being government officers, we'll tell you.
Yeah.
They said, an Atlas missile was accidentally fired in a silo and then blew up partway out of the silo, got partway up through the doors, according to them, and a nuclear warhead flew off of it.
God.
And they said it fell somewhere and they can't find it, and they're frantic. And they've come to the conclusion it must have landed in the highway. Somebody picked it up, and they said, well, if somebody picked it up, they'll find out, because whoever picked it up will have radiation poisoning and everything, and then we'll find out. So after a little while, they said, well, you guys in a marked government vehicle, we'll let you on through. So we went on through and drove through, and then about a month later, we ran into one of the officers that we saw that night, and we had to bring it up. We said, whatever happened with that? Did they ever find that nuclear? And he said, yeah, they did, up in Cleveland. He said some old Indian was driving up the highway, and apparently he just claimed that it flew off into the road, and he stopped, picked it up, and threw it in the trunk of his car and took it to Cleveland with him, and then 2 weeks later ended up in the hospital with a radiation poisoning. We thought that sounded kind of strange. Well, they said, you haven't heard the worst of it. This is the second one that blew up tonight. I think they said tonight. Two accidentally blown. We couldn't believe that.
Well, if you, I don't know, maybe. Robert, what about it? After all, they did hover over silos. They did move silo covers, as you mentioned, melted one. Then why not what this man said?
Well, I'm convinced, Art, they've been monitoring our ICBM capability for years. Now, whether they caused those Atlases to explode or not, I don't know. I know when I was in FEMA, working out of Tucson, we were paying a lot of attention to our problem with the Titan missiles down there. And these Titans were liquid-fueled, and they were leaking all the time, and guys were dying, and they had a couple of problems where they almost launched themselves. So it's been nothing but headache from the very beginning. Now with the Minuteman, it's supposedly a fail-safe unit. You know, it's a solid-fuel weapon, and they're not supposed to be able to get out of the silo unless somebody pushes the right button.
Mm.
But there's no question there's been interference, both here and in the Soviet Union.
On the international line, you're on the air with Robert Dean. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bell and Mr. Dean.
Yes.
This may sound like a stretch of the imagination, this type of question, but it's the only one I can come up with. I've studied the Bible to the point of, you know, knowing a little bit more than average about it. And I was wondering if it's possible that this 10th planet that people talk about,
mm-hmm.
could it be something like what Revelations in the King James Bible describes as the New Jerusalem? I mean, that's the only logic I could come up with for its dimension.
And Robert?
Well, it's an interesting point. I don't really know about the New Jerusalem. I read the Bible, and I was raised a Christian, and I think there's a lot of beauty and truth and poetry in the Bible. But this 12th planet, or 10th planet, actually, is apparently 2.5 times the size of the Earth. And it is in an orbit, apparently, where it comes back every 3,600 years. And its last pass, apparently, was 1600 B.C. So it's right on time. And
do the math, yeah.
I suspect we'll probably be seeing a little bit about it, and maybe they'll start releasing a little bit of information here in the next year or so.
Year or so. First time caller line, you're on the air with Robert Dean. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. First of all, I want to say it's an honor to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
Yes, and Mr. Dean, I have seen a lot of your stuff on TV, and you're a very fascinating person, and thank the human race for having you around. My two questions are, I'll be really brief. My first question is, the four species that you read about when you were in NATO, what did they look like? And my second question is, the mountain you speak about in Alaska, I don't know if you're able to say this or not on the air, but where about is the location of that? And then that's it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. The four species, Robert, what did they look like?
The four different groups that they knew about when they published the assessment in 1964 was all four of them were humanoid, but one of the four was totally human, and that was the thing that bothered the generals and the admirals more than anything else. They had seen them. They had gotten out of their ships, and they had talked to people. They had invited people aboard for a ride. They even had photographs of some of them. These guys were so human that they could sit next to you in a theater or a restaurant.
And you wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know the difference. And that bothered the military guys because, you know, being primarily paranoid, as we were all trained to be, the idea that somebody could from another planet could be walking up and down the halls of SHAPE or walking up and down the halls of the Pentagon, that blew them out of the water. This one group looked totally like we are, and I think that's the group, in my opinion, that's probably involved in trying to keep us alive. I think that group is the group that would like to kind of make us, at least hopefully, see us survive. What was the other question?
The other question was about Alaska, Robert, whether you could identify.
Well, I don't know that the mountain has a name. I haven't looked at the map in some time, but it was in the southeast corner of Alaska, right up near the British Columbia border. And you can get a hold of Ingo's book, Penetration.
Mm-hmm.
He lays it out pretty clearly. It's a delightful little story of how the guys from DOD took him up there.
Is this awareness of alien presence the main reason you began remote viewing?
I'm sorry, Art, but run that by me.
Is this alien presence that you're convinced of the main reason you began remote viewing?
Well, that and the fact that I would like to get some idea in my mind, like Robert Monroe used to say, to get some idea of where I've come from, why I'm here, and where am I going.
And in your remote viewing, are you satisfied that you got answers to those questions?
Yes, Art, I do. I'm satisfied. I've learned that I am an immortal being, that I'm having just a physical experience here
mm-hmm.
at this particular period in time, and that I came here. I've been here before, apparently.
And all of this is not something that you were sure of before you remote viewed.
No, that's what's interesting about this, that my research into the alien presence has opened doors for me that I never dreamed would be opened. And now remote viewing has, you know, I was talking up to you, Joe, up in Las Vegas here not too long ago.
Yes.
And McMonagle is, in my opinion, one of the top remote viewers.
No question about it.
He's really top operating. He's under, matter of fact, he's under contract to some of the top aerospace companies in this country.
I'm sure he is.
But I talked to him, and he talked to me about how it had opened spiritual doorways for him
mm-hmm.
that had changed his life completely. And that it's done the same thing for me.
One of the things, Robert, that concerned me about remote viewing is the ability to know the future. I don't know that I want to know the future. I don't want to know perhaps the manner of my own demise. I don't want to know any of that. And so I've chosen not to pursue remote viewing for myself.
Well, Art, that's a choice that you make yourself. When you really get into it, you know, there is no such thing as time. The past, the present, and the future
that is, I believe,
all the same.
Yeah, I believe that. And remote viewing looks right across that like it's a clear window. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Robert Dean. Hello.
Yes, hi, Robert Dean. I've been listening to you all night, and there was something I want to ask you. You said you worked for FEMA. Were you aware that there was executive orders of 10995 and 11005 about executive orders to permit FEMA to take over all local, state, and national governments in suspension of constitutional guarantees?
Oh, my, yes.
Yeah. And some of the money that you were talking about that disappeared? I think I have an idea where some of it went to. There's underground cities being built, housing both humans and aliens working with the secret U.S. government.
That might account for $3.5 trillion.
Well, we've been building those underground facilities, Art, for years. We were building those back during the Cold War.
But why for humans and aliens?
Some of them have gotten pretty sophisticated over the years. They're probably, the state of the art has probably gone a lot farther than I would imagine, because I was in some of those underground facilities during the years that I worked with FEMA.
You have personally seen them?
Yeah. Some of those underground facilities, Art, are unbelievable.
Well,
they're like five-star hotels.
Well, Robert, look, I understand that we logically have to have a continuance of government capability in the case of a war.
And we call that COG. continuity of government.
There you are. And we've got to have that. So I'm not surprised we have underground facilities for that. However, if you mix in the alien part of it, I'm not sure what you get. And while you saw these, did you see anything to indicate that it was part of some kind of alien agenda or something?
No, not while I was with FEMA. No, what I saw was it was simply an attempt to have a facility that would help us maintain a continuity of government in the event of a nuclear strike.
That much makes absolute sense to me, and I'm not surprised we have it. I'd be surprised if we didn't. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Dean. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's an honor to speak with you, Mr. Bell.
Thank you.
I thought of the two perfect questions I want to ask. The first one is, given everything that you've seen in your life and everything that you've read and all of the speculation that you've come to know, I want to know, from your perspective, what's the one thing you've seen or come to know that gives you the most hope or joy or the good? And what's the one thing that you've seen over the years that just strikes fear in the core of your being? And I'll hang up and listen.
All right. The best and worst you've seen, Robert.
Well, that's a good question, Hart.
That's got to be a fast answer.
Well, I'll tell you this. The worst I've seen is human ignorance. The best I've seen over the years, what I've learned is that God exists.
And you know this comfortably, without any question, as much as you know you are here today.
God exists, Art, and I know that beyond the question of doubt.
Well,
listen, if I may, before you sign off here, I'd like to tell people to go to my website.
Which is?
I've got you know, beyondzebra.com. I've got some recommended reading lists, and there are a few videos and CD-ROMs that I made, and my wife has got a dynamite book called The Confessions of an Intergalactic Anthropologist.
That's almost hard to get out.
I'm married to a bright young woman by the name of Marcia Schaefer.
Buddy, thank you. We got to go. We're out of time. Robert Dean, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.